This show is not for the easily offended, so if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Well, folks, it's hard to believe that so soon after 400, the Indie Comic Book Noise crew is back with episode 401.
Hey, that doesn't mean this episode's coming out fast.
I told you I had more books.
Well, and I promised I was going to try and get these shows back on some kind of regular order, but what you weren't expecting is we got the full four members back. I wasn't expecting that for sure, and I'm sure those loyal listeners who still have their MP3 listening devices tuned to the Indie Comic Book Noise Network are in for a treat. We are.
Since episode one.
I'm used to seeing you guys like once a year now.
Well, that's it. You know, I can't make this a habit.
And we are the Indie Comic Book Noise crew, and we're part of the Deliberate Noise Network, which has lots of fine shows on it. You can go find our website if you don't like dealing with iTunes and other podcast catchers at indiecomicbooknoise.com, and that's Indie IE. We're also on the Facebooks, apparently. We're certainly on the Twitter at Indie Comic Book N. We, you know, didn't have room for the full name. And we're also individually able to be contacted. And this is the show where we talk about anything we want that's not completely Big 2 related. Although it can be somewhat Big 2 tangentially related. And who are we, you ask? We are the usual crew from Marvel Noise. More specifically, if you're not a Marvel person, I'm Andrew the LA Rabbit. And we have the dynamic duo north of the border.
Don't pair me and Kevin together.
That charming voice belongs to the Ottawa Otter, Phil. Say hi, Phil.
Ottawa Otter.
And
how's that stuff?
And in his secret base that's colder than the Arctic Circle is WWX Kev, the Whirlwind.
I might be changing my name to a Yeti. I was thinking about it. Like, what about the Whirlwind Yeti? Would that be awesome? Whirlwind Y?
It can't be the Wendigo because that's too big, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, the W would. Yeah.
I was thinking maybe you should go more for Blizzard if you're going to go for, like, old Iron Man villains. He seems more appropriate to your temperature. And last, and certainly not least, the man that keeps the metaphorical audio trains running on time from the bunker, the comic book bunker fabled throughout all the land, Super Steve.
Hey, yet I'm the one who's been most responsible for the delays of late. And it's amazing how no hiatus is long enough to make the Ottawa Otter nomenclature disappear from Phil's visage.
Yeah, I don't like this name still.
Hey, Phil is sacrificing. He's the one that will be getting up in about 2 hours from now. recording.
I'm off tomorrow, so.
Yay!
I'm just tired.
It is tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's another midnight recording.
2 minutes to midnight.
More like 15 minutes after midnight for you crazy characters. All right, so we all have some books to talk about, but as de facto host, I turn the tables over to the three of you. Who would like to go first and offer something up?
Spin the big wheel, Andrew. Spin the big wheel. No, actually, it has to go around at least once.
Oh.
Do it again.
And it landed on Phil.
Oh, fuck you. Oh.
Wow, I have to get you before you fall asleep, Phil. We've only got you probably for about 20 minutes before you nod off, so.
All right, well, I picked up, have you ever heard of the company Comics Tribe?
Yes. Many years ago, my only trip to New York Comic Con, they were running a deal, and I bought a whole bunch of stuff off their table.
Okay, yeah, I thought it looked familiar, the company, but I don't know if I've read any of their stuff. But this is a comic called Sync by John Lees. What do you mean?
No, I I didn't remember Comics Tribe, but I think I know the comic you're talking about, which is good.
And the art's by Alex Cormack, who sounds familiar, but I don't know if I know him or not. But I had picked up issue 4. I never saw issue 1 to 3. But I think, I don't know for sure, but I think it's kind of like an anthology, like a different story each issue. And this one's kind of like, sort of like a Stranger Things or It or kind of story, where it's a group of kids.
Yeah, and I was going to say it was probably It, because I think it came out the first issue along the same time as that movie.
Okay, so maybe it does all go together, but it seemed like it. Yeah, it's probably all connected, because it's probably a clown character maybe shows up in all of them or something. But basically, it's these group of kids, and they're talking about how kids are going missing from this clown in a blue van, like serial killer type thing. And so they decide to go out and try and solve the crime. And so they end up kind of doing like little kid detective work, and they end up going to this abandoned building where they think the killer clown might be, with weapons and stuff. Like, when I say weapons, it's like hockey sticks, things like that, like kids would have. No, and they enter the building, and there's this bloody guy hanging upside down, getting beaten by this guy in like a fox or wolf mask kind of thing, named Mr. Dig. And he just starts talking to the kids, and almost like in a very respectful way. He's not the killer, but he just like kind of teaches them a lesson of why they don't want to go out and go kill this clown thing or whatever.
He's just being instructive.
Yeah.
As he bludgeons this person to death.
Yeah, it's really neat how he does it kind of thing. But the guy ends up getting free, knocks him out, and then the kids end up having to chop that mob guy up pretty much and, like, murder him. So they ended up killing anyway. And then, like, at the end, it's kind of cool, because then you see the blue van pull up to one of the kids as he's walking home, because they never actually got the clown.
Wait, so if they use hockey sticks, did any of them get 2 minutes for slashing?
I don't know sports.
Come on,
jokes,
that's a hockey.
No,
Kevin, no support on that.
Sports jokes.
Canadian, it's hockey. Come on.
So dumb, hitting things with sticks. Come on.
And Kevin is silent.
But yeah, I
was still caught up on the guy that was called Mr. Dig, and then immediately my mind went, "What if there was a Mr. Doug?"
What?
I don't get that.
You love children playing hockey. It's your thing, the juniors.
This is true.
But yeah, I really enjoyed this, and I really want to get issue 1 to 3. But the next issue, I don't think I'll get, because it's called White Dog, and it's about really cool art and everything. But there's one picture, it's a box with all these bloody dog collars and stuff. So I just think it'll be kind of a sad comic, you know, kind of thing. Huh. It's like some guy going around killing people's pets and stuff. But yeah, I really want to see what the first 3 issues are about.
Nice. I know you're a dog person, Phil.
Yeah.
So we can't have those certain, we all have certain things that we don't want to see. And
yeah, well, I certainly don't mind that those stories are out there. I just don't like to look at it, though.
Nice. Super Steve, you want to share something from the bunker?
Yeah. I think it was, I don't remember what episode it was, but sometime, it must have been in 2016, I think, in Baltimore, I ran across, maybe it was special edition, the New York City Comic Con special edition, when they did it on the dock on that rainy day when it was all great for paper products, on a dock that's over water on a rainy day, you know, nowhere for the moisture to go except into the paper around the place. But I ran into an author, Fabrice Sapolsky, and his claim to fame at that time had been he, for Marvel, had written the Spider-Man Noir limited series, which now, all these years, a couple of years later, it turns out that's the only work of his that I haven't read now, and I've really enjoyed his other stuff. He gave me at the time an ash can, like, zero-issue little mini story of a concept that he was developing for Dynamite. Well, he was developing it for himself and the artist and shopping it around, and he's pretty frank about the nature of the business as far as publishers and kind of what kinds of deals they give different creators and how much they take or what ownerships or what sort of, you know, entry fee you need to pony up to be able to get yourself published. And it's quite, it's interesting because Sapolsky's the real deal as far as being a real good pro with a lot of different great ideas. And it's disheartening in some ways to hear about some of the struggles of getting your stuff out there. But at the same time, great that some of the stuff is out there. And one of these things is this Intertwined. It went on to be published by Dynamite in 2016 and 17, 6 issues. It's now been collected in a Volume 1 trade paperback called Coming to America, Intertwined. And the artist is Fred Pham Chong and Veronica Lopez on colors. And it's mature, blood and guts, and big boy language throughout. Really cool concept. I mean, this needs to have a volume 2, 3, etc. It's like you take the 5 elements of Chinese philosophy: metal, water, wood, fire, and earth, and you assign each of them like a kick-ass armored champion with powers that relate to the element, and then these champions all maintain like some sort of cosmic balance, right, and keep all the feng shui in line, you know? But the balance has been upset. One of the elements is making a move to collect all of these statue talismans that each of the other elements are. It's like a little power source type of thing. And because it's happening in, I'm not sure if it's exactly really current times or if it's like 70s. It feels like 70s. Kung Fu movie kind of stuff, but like it's like Yakuza-like dudes. I mean, they're killing guys' wives and infants and stuff like that in order to press them to find these different statues and stuff. And then there's also the story of this young protagonist who kind of gets caught up in it all unwittingly, and he ends up having to replace the champion of the Spirit of the Earth, who's been killed. I mean, there's this great fight sequence, and that's what was in the Zero issue, the little ash can thing, and then it was later, I'm not sure if it's in the regular issues, but it was in the trade paperback collection where they kind of rearranged some stuff and some scenes to make it more chronological and added some pages and things, which is interesting when they do that to the collections. But there's this great fight sequence where the original Spirit of the Earth gets taken down and sort of betrayed and sort of put to his limits, and his armor's all cool. It's like this wooden armor that's all earthy and like a little bit, like you could imagine some of the little bit of like tiny tendrils moving, not like big things, but it just seems very organic and barky. It kind of looks a little bit like Marvel's Ronin that back in those New Avengers days when Hawkeye or whoever the heck it was wearing that armor. Very similar in some design. I'll post it on the Facebook page and on the Twitter account. It's cool. But he gets all caught up in this and then has to, you know, fight the guy who took down his predecessor just as he's like learning the ropes and deciding whether he even wants to take the ropes and whether he even has the choice not to take the ropes and all that. It's a awesome, again, mature read. That's the art is kinetic but not distorted, but it's pretty fast paced even though there's a lot of story in there because it's real world building, high concept type stuff that I can't wait for them to be able to fund doing a second volume. Intertwined, it's real cool. You gotta check it out.
It sounds it. It's always good when you find something at a show and then are able to get more of the same, you know, because sometimes that's it. Like you're at the show and you see that one thing and then you never get issue 2 or the trade or anything.
Or then it's option for a movie and they never make any more.
Yeah, well, he was like, be on the lookout for this. And then when it came out, I bought the singles and then ended up buying the collection just because it was worth having as a collection. And here's an interesting thing. He and I forget the artist's name, forgive me, who he is doing it with, but they have I've seen him at a shows recently, and they have an interesting thing going where they have made like sketch cover like book covers almost. Remember the old days when we actually had books in school and we would like make book covers out of paper bags, or you could buy the book cover fold-ins, that kind of thing. It's almost like a jacket for a comic book, but it's in heavier comic book, art board, thickness, that kind of thing, and quality, and you could use it as a sketch cover for any comic.
Nice.
By wrapping it around the comic. It was pretty kind of a cool thing. You could do it just a front or a back, or do it as a fold out, or kind of a cool concept.
Very cool. I like now that it seems like just the generic sketch covers a lot of the indie companies. I think one of the first ones I saw was an Atomic Robo sketch cover. I know Image has a lot of them. I mean, I don't know how indie they are, except not being the big two. But I like that now people are realizing. And Misfortune High, I think I talked about when I saw the creator. She had a whole bunch of sketch covers, so I got it from her, and she did a sketch on the book. And it's just kind of a fun way. I don't know if it's an extra cost to them is prohibitive or something, but I really think it's a smart marketing tip as a guy who likes to buy things at shows to be able to get like a special version of it. All right, that means the wheel spins round to Kevin.
All right. Do you guys read this one? Or were you just like, no, I'm not following this suspicious link that he drops in an email?
I started along, so take me home.
I started along too and I got bored.
I looked at it on my phone, but it was really tiny.
It seemed artsy fartsy.
I can see that, but I don't think it's it's totally something I could see like being a TCAF, and that looks interesting.
I looked at the rest of his work though, and it all seemed kind of the same.
Yeah, they have a lot of similar things on the website. I should name the website. That would be helpful. This is what I do, right? I talk to myself.
Yes.
This is like the solo bit I did, and then I lasted like 6 minutes before, 6 minutes, 6 seconds before I talked to myself.
You talk to yourself, but you don't.
I'm talking to myself, and there's people here.
Even when you talk to us, but what the important thing is getting in the it's the information. It's what the talk is about. You got to get that book title in there at some point.
Anyways, this book is Uninhabitable. Which you can read at jedmcgowan.com. You could also purchase a copy if you don't want to read it online, or you enjoyed the story so much that you must own this type of thing, which would be kind of cool to see the paper texture and type of craziness.
Was that just a preview or the full thing?
I assume it's the full thing. But I guess there could be, like, hidden extras or other cool things.
It felt very digital to me as far as the, the layout and the font and the way the word balloons and all that sort of stuff were. So, yeah, it would be. But the color was very vibrant in on a lot of the pages. So I wonder how it would translate to print.
Yeah, it seemed like very geometric, and it had that like texture over everything. But it was I don't know, something about it. I was just like, ooh, this is very, this feels like something. And I would hope like the physical copy would also have that nice feeling. So this is basically a story of like little robots or like nanites or something like that. Because it's a story of colonization, where these people show up in their little spaceship here. What a cool... I don't know. Is it like National Geographic? It just reminds me of like maybe like old drawings of like, hey, this is what the future is going to look like or something. Like spaceships and stuff like that. But some of the extra attachments onto their spaceship. Anyways, these dudes show up at the planet, and they unleash all these little robot nanite type of things, like billions of them, And its goal for the next 1,000 years is to, like, terraform a planet. And then I was reading this wondering, okay, is this just going to go through, like, we were supposed to do this and do that. Is the story going to become something? But it does become about something. So, like, these things that were put onto the planet, they start changing the planet. And they're like, oh, so, like, when the people come back, it's like they're going to have somewhere to live. But then the planet, at some point, you see, like, a shape in the clouds and everything. Like, the planet starts, like, rebelling. So it's basically a planet versus, like, all these terraforming agents. And the story's about these...
About penis dudes. Worms with all these legs.
well, that's you start thinking about the story, and it's also about, like, how much can you control? Like, these things are there to change the world, but then the world starts rebelling, and then, like, these little robot things are just like, oh, we're such a failure. So it's almost like about life things. It's like you can only control so much in your life. And then what are you going to do about it? Like, what can you do? What do you want to do? And what can you control? But it's basically a story about trying to persevere in a rough situation. So it fits really well into my sci-fi planets type of. It's not on not Titan though. That would have been weird if it fit into my subgenre of subgenres of Titan, but it still fits into my wonderful sci-fi stories.
And you like world building,
like that whole certain indie vibe sometimes we talk about, like the, I don't think, like, it's different, but it's not like, doesn't give off a certain vibe, I don't think.
No, it seemed very slick and professional, if that's what you mean by indie vibe.
Yeah, I mean, like the good stuff, I guess I should say. And it's not, like, so artsy that, like, you turn one page and there's just, like, some dot or something, and it's like, you figure it out, or, you know, it's nothing like that. It's all about telling the story.
And the answer was inside of her all along.
And it's free. It's a free story. Go read it.
You can't beat the price of free. Well, I guess the wheel has spun back around to the host. All right, do you boys want to talk about licensed comics or the power of friendship?
License. I hate happy things.
Hey, the Care Bears?
All right, we're going to talk about IDW. Ideas Workshop. They're a big licensing house, and a surprise license I found they had was the Star Wars license.
I changed my mind.
Too late. I thought that was going to be Kevin, because we all know he doesn't like Star Wars. But it was the Star Wars Forces of Destiny line.
Yeah, I picked up. Doesn't this have good creators on it?
How did they get the license?
I picked up the rate. The Forces of Destiny is an interesting. What they are cartoon shorts. You can look them up on YouTube. They air on the TV as well, but they have them all on YouTube. And really? They're aimed at a... Yeah, I've watched them there plenty of times. So they feature some of the new characters. They also have ones that feature the older ones, too, because there's a Princess Leia one. But it's a lot based in the Rebels... Oh, go ahead, Steve.
Are they all girls, though? I mean, the comics seemed like it was aimed at, you know, young girls.
Yeah, they're all, the cartoons are all feature the lady characters. But there's also, you know, Han Solo's in it and the robots and things like that. So they're fairly, you know, acceptable to anyone who enjoys the Star Wars universe. And I wouldn't suggest if you just go to YouTube and look up Star Wars Forces of Destiny, you'll be able to watch them because they're pretty short. I think they're, like, an average story is probably like 5 minutes. And they have a series of them, and so sometimes they'll link them together based on the character. So I think Rey has, like, 3 different shorts. And then they pick characters from Clone Wars, as well the cartoon, and Rebels, the cartoon, and then the new movies. And like I said, Princess Leia has a few. And I decided, ooh, I saw the Ray comic book. And I was like, I'll try this out. It's a Jody Houser, Ariana Florian, Adele Matera, and Tom B. Long for the letterer.
Does it tell who her parents are?
What I didn't realize is that these are pretty much square up, like, adaptations of the cartoon. I thought it might be, like, kind of spin-off stories or... I mean, I don't know that it's, like, frame for frame, because I don't have the shows memorized or whatever. So, I don't regret buying it, but I feel kind of like... I was sort of hoping it would just be in that universe and not just, here you go. And I also think that it's pretty risky, because it's already a free video. It's a free cartoon online. Yeah. So it's going to be hard to get kids to be like... Although, maybe it's a good way to get them to read, like, if they like the cartoon... then this might be a good trick to get them into reading.
They're going to put it into a digest-sized collection. You know what I mean?
That makes sense.
And market it to, to who we think they're marketing it towards.
Yeah, the other popular anime does those, like, cartoon adaption type of things where it's sort of like frames from the cartoon.
I mean, this isn't... like, the art style is evocative of that, but it's not like a Fumetti where they're just taking, like, the stills. I had one of those. I ordered it online without realizing what it was, but Disney, the movie Zootopia, they did a version of that where it was literally just... they take stills from the movie and put dialogue in it. So this is...
Joe books, right?
Yeah. So this is the use of... you know, the art team is adapting it. It's just a little bit more directly connected to the thing, and because you can watch them now online, it's one of those curious things. But I think Steve's right. The best bet is going to be when they end up collecting these all into something, and then you can hand someone a little digest, because it just seems like at $3.99, I don't know how many young kids are going to be getting it, but maybe it's also for people like me, older people who like Star Wars crap. It's always tough to tell the sort of applicability market, especially when you look at something like the toys, where you're like, some of these toys definitely look for kids, and some, like the Hot Toys tie-ins and stuff, clearly I doubt a lot of people are buying them for the kids. And then the Legend style, you're like, are people giving those to kids? I mean, I certainly buy that style of sophisticated sculpt with little laser guns and things like that, but I could also see like a kid playing with them too. Steve, do your sons enjoy like the 6-inch style kind of Marvel Legends / Star Wars guys in that world?
We don't have any Star Wars guys of that size, but I have a slew of the 3 3/4-inch ones. Not from the old days. I lost most of those in my house fire and stuff. But they have flirted with it, but I've been really disappointed at their lack of interest overall in action figures, other than sort of just checking them out and occasionally equipping them and unequipping them and that kind of stuff. But they lack all of the storytelling drive that we used to have when we were playing with our action figures and stuff. And you know what it is? It's the Lego market has just destroyed everything. Like, Lego has taken over, like, their video game stuff, their action figure, like, the minifigures are their versions of action figures now, and setting them up with their Lego things and stuff. And they do little storyline and things with that, but yeah, it's not like our day where we would set up, you know, spend almost as long setting up the scenario and the bat and then the positions before the battle as actually enacting it.
Well, I can certainly see how those, I mean, I've played those Lego games. They are very immersive, and now with the options where you build your own stuff in the game, it certainly feels like it's a lot faster, that's for sure, to build something in that game than it does to build it in the real life. But I don't want to, like I said, there's no knock against, it's a well executed comic and thoroughly professional. I just had the wrong notion that this was going to be more set in that world and less of like a straight up thing. So if you're interested in that, certainly check them out. I think they're quality, at least this one. I can't imagine the rest of the series isn't. But if you're curious about it, there's also, like I said, you can just YouTube Star Wars Forces of Destiny and watch a bunch of the shorts and get a feel for how they're doing it. One of the interesting things is they've actually retained some of the movie voiceover talent. I believe Daisy Ridley actually does the voice of Rey and some of the other characters they were able to get, which is pretty rare. A lot of times they have sound-alikes for this sort of work, so it was just nice that they were able to get the real people. Plus, I believe there was like a 12-inch doll line. I have some of them. I think that might be out of this book. And they have like the little action, like when you squeeze their legs, you know, the one lady swings her lightsaber type of thing, which was very old school. Makes me laugh, because that was always a big... From our youth, Steve, you probably remember those ones, like, squeeze their leg and they karate chop or whatever. Yeah.
Well, the DC ones, yeah, did that too.
Oh, that's right. I have those, like the Dark Side and all those... the Green Lantern would raise his lantern up. And you're like, what's he going to hit someone in the head with that lantern? I mean,
Marvel had a line with those where they all had like shields with holograms on them.
Secret Wars.
Yeah,
I love those Secret Wars toys. They were the worst toys in the universe, but because of the license, that's what made them special to me. Was like, whoa, a little Spider-Man. True.
Yeah. That's when I knew I was done with action figures, though. I bought the Wolverine one because it was a Wolverine action figure, finally. But then I really didn't play with it, and I was like, you know what? I've outgrown action figures.
Oh, good God. I still play with action figures, Steve.
Well, I have kids now, so that was my rationale.
Yeah, you have kids. I don't have kids, and I still play with action figures. So probably a disgraceful indictment of juvenile behavior and Peter Pan syndrome. But yeah, IDW has one of the Star Wars licenses. So it's kind of fun to see, as I think it's smart to sort of encourage bidding and competitive work on your license.
Well, what it is, it seems to be the more geared towards younger kids angle. You know, they are doing the Star Wars adventures. That seems like it's a, for lack of a better word, more cartoony and aimed towards kids type, shorter, done in one type features. Actually, some of them have continued on, so I take that back. But, and then this as well. And I know they're also publishing some other things like the Skylanders video game world adaptation stuff and some other kid related. So they must have some marketing drive, publishing drive, publishing initiative along those lines that Disney, Marvel was happy to, use.
Well, I figure it's got to have grown out of the My Little Pony stuff. I mean, that's really proved that they can put out a kid's book.
Sure.
That's still, you know, still going seemingly as strong. I mean, I don't know. It seems like there's every week a new, I don't know if they're limited series or different. I don't know the business model, but whatever it is, it's working. And I remember a few years ago at an IDW panel, certainly they were very appreciative of the popularity of that thing, because I think at those pony books were outselling like half the company, sort of like Walking Dead, you know, half the company is that, and then the rest is everything else, and us weird old guys asking about artist editions, and all these little people coming up asking about the pony books and everything. But it's also nice to see them reaching out to the next generation, because as I've remarked before, I think it's really hard for comics to compete. How can a comic book compete with video games and YouTube and all that stuff, you know?
Not at that price, can't.
All right, who's up next? We need some cheeriness after my grim pronouncement that comic books are dead.
Phil doesn't like things to be happy.
No, I have something unhappy. I just read, I started reading it. It's eight issues. I'm three issues in for a series called Night Trap by Lion Forge Comics. And it's done by Cullen Bunn and J.B. Bastios.
Hmm. And, now, was this a paper comics, Phil, or digital?
I have digital. I don't know if Lion Forge, if they do paper or not.
They used to do paper, then they were big into digital, and I think they do both now. But I'm always curious, because for a while they were pretty much, I mean, they had little ash cans, but at the shows, they're almost always digital, and now I think they're trying to do both. But I know they're pushing into, like, their own superhero universe and different stuff, but back then it was a lot of licenses. They had, like, the, like, an Airwolf, just weird license, and, like, a Rampage Jackson. He was, like, a fighter or MMA guy, or he had a comic. It was a lot of just bizarre mishmash of things.
Well, this is only 14 pages, the first issue, so it's definitely digital. Just digital, these ones.
Blue Thunder versus Airwolf.
Yeah. It was a weird one to see, like, you're like, that thing's been off the air for 20 years, but I guess the license was easy to get. But anyways, Phil, go on. 14-page comic does seem like a little pricey for the paper.
Yeah, and I always find it surprising how these little companies get, like, the big names, like Cullen Bunn and stuff. Like, does he own part of this company or something? Or
they had a bunch of, I believe, Christopher Priest. They lured him for a little while to help build their superhero universe. I think particularly with the writers, it's easy to, because they can do 20 projects at once, I think it's easy to lure a little bit of their time. Mm-hmm. Rather than when they get the big name artists. Those are, to me, more impressive, because most of those guys can only do one thing at a time. So,
yeah, so this one basically, it's about, like, the first issue starts off with basically this guy watching horror movies in the bayou, and he has all these dead bodies in the water, and all these FBI agents start kind of raiding him, and it's basically, you find out, basically, he set a trap for them, and that's how the first issue ends. And then the second issue goes to these kids that are rented a cottage, just like, it's a horror movie you've seen 100 times, and they explain why they can't use their cell phones and all the normal stuff. And basically, yeah, so it's just a comic about them against these hillbillies, and the house they rented, from what I can tell so far, seems like it's the night trap, you know, that they set. And they're just killing them off one by one. Not a lot has happened in the first three issues. Definitely not Cullen Bunn's best work. You can tell it something he just kind of rushed out, maybe. But at the same time, still a little enjoyable. But there's only been one kill so far with the kids. So I'm guessing the next few issues, it's probably going to be ramping up big time.
I'd love it if they didn't. It was just a big tease the whole way along.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they let them all go, Phil.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you like horror movies like that, it's definitely worth picking up. I think it's only 8 issues. I don't know if it goes any longer than that. But yeah, they're all 14 pages. I didn't even notice that when I was reading them. They felt like full issues.
Well, that's certainly
That's
well,
good, though.
Very good. I mean, to feel like you get the quality. Like I said, I had the Rampage Jackson mini ash can I got at a show somewhere, but I don't know what I did with it. Super Steve?
I read 4 issues of Nam Wolf.
I read the first one of that.
This is the second title from Eric Powell's Albatross Funny Books line, along with Hillbilly, which is a really great book from Powell. Mm-hmm. And I think something like Spooky Stories or something like that, that's kind of like for kids, almost like an EC Comics anthology thing. But
also good.
Yeah, they're very good, although published less frequently. Nam Wolf is 4 issues. And ends up being a complete tale, so I'm sure it'll be collected soon if it hasn't already been solicited. Written by Fabian Rangel Jr., with art by Logan Faber, colors by Brennan Wagner. It's 1970, guys, and the year I was born. Marty Spencer is drafted to fight the Viet Cong in Vietnam, and he meets his unit. There's Sergeant Ben McHenry, Doc, Killer Joe, Burnout, Radio Jones, and Geronimo, who is a Latino from South Texas who got mistook for an Apache. I love, you know, that's one of the best things about old war stories, especially like Vietnam, World War II comics, is when, you know, they introduce the unit, you know, everyone has their special gift that they bring to the task at hand, or they end up just being, you know, another body for the count. Anyway, but Marty Spencer, he's floundering around until his unit gets under really heavy fire. They're taking casualties, and he turns for the first time into the Nam Wolf. There's cursing, there's blood and guts, there's werewolf slashing and ripping, and the art's kind of kinetic. And
great look to the comic, I find.
Yeah, like when he's the wolf, it's more of a outline of the figure, and the inside of it is not detailed at all, and it just makes it, I mean, it reminds me of like an old Sienkiewicz demon bear at times, that kind of thing. The Viet Cong, they develop their own monster that he has to fight at one point, and then Stuart eventually endears himself to his unit because he's in control when he's the wolf. But Uncle Sam sort of hears about the exploits of the Nam Wolf and sweeps in and like steals him in the middle of the night and tries to program him and copy his serum, you know, his blood and stuff, so they can make their own. Another wolf, werewolf soldier, which they do, and then he's out of control, and then Nam Wolf has to challenge the odds and take down this darker, stronger version of himself. It's very another entertaining read. Really cool colors too throughout. I found it to be a really well put together book, just like the other Albatross stuff. I met Eric Powell, must have been again like a year or year and a half ago or so, and he had a promotional, you know, 11x17 type poster for Nam Wolf, and was describing the concept to me at that time, and definitely paid off. It was cool.
If you're curious about Fabian, friend of the show, Wendy Freeman, on her show Double Page Spread, interviewed him somewhere, I think about a year ago or within the last year, pretty recently. If you go back, you can find her show. And if you're interested, it was a fun interview here. And I believe in that when they talked a lot about werewolf movies and horror movies, and he's a big fan of that stuff, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, I mean, and there's more to the story. There's some family history and some good werewolfy kinds of stuff in there, but I just wanted to give you the basics.
All right, Kevin, are you still awake?
Crickets.
Wasn't sure if you were giving us your swarm impersonation or not.
Swarm. Hey, that actually works well with this. Yes. that's actually a good segue to what I'm reading.
Uh-oh.
So I went from watching the anime on Netflix to I need more of this. I need to read something that's
Voltron.
That's awesome. That everyone talks about.
Voltron.
One Punch Man.
That was close.
Because Zwarm or Zax wouldn't be out of place in a story like this. Because it seems like sometimes the bad guys are only like background or you know, just something to have a little bit of a fight with, but that's not the main thrust of the story.
What's the main thrust of the story?
Well, they have a whole... This is volume 8 from Viz Media. And I guess it's in the Shonen Jump category, which sometimes doesn't always excite me.
So is it the most recent volume, or you just picked up volume 8 at random?
No, because the anime did volumes 1 to 7, so I picked up volumes 8 until, 12, 13? You know, maybe I'll do a volume an episode. We'll see.
We'll see how well that goes over.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we might be asking you to go back to Valiant coverage.
402 takes 3 months to come out. I'll have read all the volumes by then, and then, you know.
I miss Valiant.
Wow. Wow, Phil misses Valiant. How about that?
It's all relative.
But this takes place like after like a massive threat happened to the Earth, and when Punch Man was there and so many other heroes to stop this big threat that was from outer space, because they basically catalog all their villains and heroes, like how big the threat is and or how powerful and important their heroes are. And there's one in here called King, and you're like, wow, this guy is supposed to be like the best ever. And then they like, you can hear this like booming and everything once he shows up, and everyone's like, oh, that's like that's his King engine, like that he just intimidates the bad guys and everything, and it's like his heart pumping, like that's how stressed out, how into like he gets into like everything and throwing down at the bad guys. But you actually find out something here about him that's really interesting, I thought. So I'm not going to spoil what that is, but needless to say, instead of things going in a weird grim direction, things are usually more fun. Like, yeah, city blocks are leveled in crisis after crisis. Villain after villain is doing something, or there's explosions or giant robots that are stepping on your homes. But they don't really, like, deal with that type of consequence stuff.
It's more about...
They deal, like, more with the character and down-to-earth type of stuff. Like, this King hero, he goes home and he like has bought a video game, and he's like, oh man, I can't wait to play this type of thing. So One Punch Man follows him home, and then King's like all freaking out, oh no, I'm so embarrassed, you're gonna see what I'm really into and all this stuff. And he's like, why is this guy here and everything? And One Punch Man's just like, oh, I just saw your windows open, so I came to see you, and we can play video games and all this stuff. So it's usually more like crazy moments like that. But you're thinking, I'm trying not to spoil the thing, but there's a reason, there's something that happens there, and you would think that in another comic that would cause drama or friction or some kind of thing, and it would escalate, and then One Punch is like, no, that's cool. I'm not really concerned about that type of thing. I just want to, he just wants to know why that occurred. And he'll just come back later and when everything's cool and they can play video games again.
Well, I got to guess if you mention booms, it's going to be a DC crossover. And that's a boom tube going off.
So there's some other stories in here. It's not just like that one whole thing. Like there's usually several villains or several whatever is going on. There's also been a prophecy that like this big event is going to happen. There's going to be a massive like crisis or a massive like everyone's going to die or just something big, something on a god level scale. So they're trying to, like, the organization of that has all the superheroes raided is like calling in all the villains, like, hey, you know, the heroes will probably be overwhelmed in the future. Do any of you, you know, villains like want to save the world type of thing? And this is just an excuse to introduce like tons and tons of new characters, and any name that you think is ridiculous is not ridiculous, or it is ridiculous and they just don't care. Like, I could see more, like, serious comics going, we're not going to have a character like that. We gotta keep our grim vibe going. But in here, it's like anything is fair game. And then One Punch Man has to go help someone find their cat.
And that's just volume 8, you said? You're only on the...
Yeah, volume 8.
And there's at least 12, and it's still ongoing, or is it over with?
It's still ongoing.
Nice.
Well,
and I wouldn't say that it is super stereotypical, or like the things only get, I think, super exaggerated when characters start showing emotion or like overreacting to something.
Yeah, or they talk to a girl, or we know these comics.
And I think that's totally appropriate, because if you're cartooning, like, you usually exaggerate that stuff anyways. That's comics.
Yeah, I know. Comics like to portray how difficult it is to talk to girls. But remember, folks, girls are humans too. And if Kevin's going to mention something that was referenced in our last episode, that means I get to mention something that was referenced in our last episode. And it's a book from Fantagraphics that I received in the mail from one Super Steve.
Nice.
And that's The Bloody Cardinal by Richard Sala. As he subtly referenced asking me whether I had picked this up, and I said no, and lo and behold, it showed up in my mailbox. So,
you always send stuff out to everybody, and there's never anything to send you. So I was like, something you'd like.
So this is, it's kind of that 3/4 size collected edition. And what's fun about Richard Sala is, I've been racking my little peanut brain trying to describe the sort of... He really evokes an atmosphere. And to me, it's part like... Imagine Nancy Drew, but for an adult, kind of. Because there's going to be bad language and murder. But there really is like a sense of mystery. Although, like I said, people really die in this thing in pretty brutal ways. But it's not done with any sort of titillation, or that's not the part of it. It's... I don't know, or maybe Nancy Drew, but cast in the form of a radio play from the 1940s or something. It really is a unique, moody atmosphere that I just love, along with, this one has its classic elements. There's usually, like, a lot of take-no-guff women and weird-looking, creepy monster dudes. And each side gives as well as it gets, but The Bloody Cardinal starts out with an excellent framing device that I think, I assume, could lead to more stories, and that is he was a former superhero turned bad guy. And his journal, they thought he was dead, but they find copies of his journal, and the beginning is just pages from his journal. Hmm. And then the rest of it is people trying to investigate what happened to him and get copies of his journal. But what's weird is in the journal there's a reference to his nemesis, which is a cat-headed man. And we never get that in the story, so that's why I think that it could continue on, and the next branch could be the cat-headed and his allies fighting against it. But there's all kinds of fun twists and turns, and the beginning part's black and white, but then it jumps to color. And I think quite cleverly, he has a one-page text insert to sort of do... It's a bit of a data dump, but I think it's done well, because generally his... He's not overly heavy with the dialogue, but he has to set up the scenario, which I like. Right. He lets the pictures kind of tell the story for the most part. But there are moments in any kind of mystery where you have to say, oh, here's what you missed, here's what the mystery goes. And it's just fun watching the characters go through, and I go along with them. And I did not guess the twists and turns in this one. I don't know if you did, Steve.
I mean, what is it about Sala? He's not really necessarily the way that his art is. It's not great sequential storytelling.
No, and his anatomy is kind of sometimes all over the place. And
it's a lot of real scene setting and mood setting, like you said. And so the way he creates such a scenario that's fun and creepy and everything like that, that the way he tries to get that across to you, you know, is in his settings and his backgrounds and his moodiness and in some of the stuff that the characters do. But, you know, the storytelling's always pretty choppy, you know, in general, and there's a lot of stuff left out, or I could just see him having really thought out a lot more than he gets to put to page. And I appreciated him trying to come up with a way to get some of it in, even like you said, it was a big data dump all at once.
The other thing I like is that the figures are always, even though, like I said, maybe the anatomy isn't perfect or moves from scene to scene, they're always very distinct. And while oftentimes the backgrounds do have detail, in every single panel, like, the figure is what your eye is drawn to.
His figures have weight.
Yeah,
you
it's
know?
Really... Go ahead, Steve, sorry.
Some of the guys that are, like, you know, the distortions on some of the villains, not in just this book but other ones, but they could be like big and blocky with like little tiny heads and or whatever else, and even if his anatomy isn't he's not going for realism, at the same time his figures are have weight in the world that he creates, and when he does color, his flesh tones and his rosy cheeks and everything, and it definitely feels like there's blood pumping through these bodies.
Yes, and like I said, I just feel like my eyes are instantly drawn to that element in it right away. I don't know. Like, there's a mood and a real power conveyed in it. But I've read some of the stuff that not everything he has is, you know, bad language and super violent. He does stuff for younger ages, too. And he still conveys the same sort of attitude in a good way. But yeah, I haven't been... disappointed with anything I've read of his, and I would suggest it. But the thing is, if you read one and don't like it, then you can probably not read the rest. Because even though they're different settings or different whatever, I feel his mood is fairly consistent. Like, I would be surprised if I picked one up and it came off like a science fiction sort of thing or some soap opera or something else. You know, he really has this kind of horror mystery vibe that he does so well.
Getting a piece of original art from Sala is climbing its way up my priority list as a collector of something that I would really like. I keep seeing ones every now and again, like a watercolor, nice one-page thing for a few hundred dollars on eBay or something. But, yeah, someday.
Yeah, but check out Fantagraphics, The Bloody Cardinal, or like I said, if you want something, there's different age ranges and all kinds
anything
of different books
Sala
out there. And I don't think you'll be disappointed. Well, boy, should we do like just some quick references, or are you ready to pack it in for 401?
That's all I got.
I got one more.
Hit us, Steve.
Although it's kind of a double. It's a twofer, but it's a quickie, because I'm not going to get into any detail, because how could you? But I've had him on my shelf for a while now, but it's just one of those things I hadn't delved into, but I did, and I'm so glad I did, because I was, and as soon as I mentioned the title, you understand why, but it seemed like a daunting task to open up the cover and to start, because when you get into it, there's a lot going on, and sometimes it really takes a lot of work on the part of the reader to try to keep up. But I found myself, especially with all the references, and I'm used to having like a skeleton key in the past to read this author's work in this universe, and I decided to just delve in and just read it like a comic book, and I just really enjoyed both of these OGNs. And they are the two Nemo graphic novels in 2013 and 2014 from Alan Moore and Kevin O'Neill. That are in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen universe. Although, what isn't in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen universe, right? I mean, so I guess more it's in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen chronology. The first one is Heart of Ice, and then the second one is The Roses of Berlin. Each is about 50 pages, I want to say, of story and ephemera. The story's probably shorter, but there's always good back matter that pinups and stuff. Top Shelf Productions, and these are stories of Captain Nemo's daughter. It's like Nemo the Next Generation, right? She still has some of her father's crew, and she's piloting the Nautilus, and they're pirates. it's cool. Heart of Ice revolves around this like deadly race to the Arctic in search of a lost city, and there's this frozen Cthulhu-like godling that they find and stuff. It's awesome. And The Roses of Berlin involves a heist into Moore and O'Neill's version of a Nazi Berlin. Like, it's like a metropolis, futuristic, and it's awesome. And her cast of conspirators are really endearing, and when sacrifices are made or people are lost, it's really poignant storytelling all the way around. I mean, these guys are so good. They get better and better working together. I think, speaking of choppy storytelling or that kind of a thing, it made the reading these through made the original League of Extraordinary Gentlemen stuff seem a little bit choppy. It's just that much smoother. And awesome back matter in the second, in The Roses of Berlin, there's an interview with Nemo on the occasion of her 70th birthday, and she's reminiscing about the events depicted in the book like 40 years later, and that's just cool stuff.
Yeah, well,
Alan Moore, he lives up to the hype, you know?
Oh my God, Alan Moore and Kevin O'Neill. Well, I have a few like sketches from meeting him at shows, and he sketches in your book. I have bid on a few of his pieces, let me tell you. I bid more than I was comfortable, and I still didn't get them. So there was a martial law piece, some of these at League pieces. Yeah, he is one of my all-time top artists. And then you pair him with Alan Moore. Yeah, I love all that stuff. Sometimes I wait because I know Top Shelf always re-releases that stuff in like 100 different formats. So you can always, you know, if you don't like whatever it's in, wait, and there'll be like a deluxe version that'll come out in a year from now, or slipcover editions or combined. Yeah, it's really...
My God, the double page spreads of like what Berlin looks like with the Nazi machine going on. I mean, it's incredible. It was so much fun then having a story being told through that world. Amazing stuff.
Yeah, well, there's no way we're going to end with a better book than that. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Indie Comic Book Noise 401. As I said, you can hit us on the Twitters. We have individual Twitters or the Facebook or the whatever. But like I said, we appreciate that you took the time, and we're going to try and stay back and stay on your radar this time. Any last catchphrases, boys, you want to slip out?
Make mine indie.
Well, we might put out more indie than Marvel this year.
No, that's not true.
Could be true.
You guys, come on.
You're the indie.
You're playing hard.
2018.
Well, keep watching the skies, gentlemen and ladies and listeners and all the people out there.
And robots. And Cthulhu monsters.
There's a table at Chipotle waiting just for you and me. There's a salsa bar, where we both can study chemistry. I'll lean over as we study, moving closer with my hips. And I'll kiss you there, I won't miss you there, as I take your face and press it through my lips. At Chipotle,
Chipotle.
A study at Chipotle.
Chipotle,
I study at Chipotle.
Chipotle.
The midterm is intense this year. It's just 5 days away.
It couldn't hurt to have his help, so Flash, what do you say?
Peter, can I talk to you over here for just 1 second?
I am Flash and you're a nerd. Let me help you find a cab. Go back home and take your books over to your science lab. And if you're try to stick your nose where I think it don't belong. It might crush beneath my fist, cause I'm definitely that strong.
Gwen, I think I
don't
should...
ignore me, don't you start, cause I'll finish this tonight. Hold my shirt, I've got this guy, hope you're ready for a fight.
Gosh, no.
Can't you hear him begging me to erase his puny face?
Here goes. I'm going.
Not so fast, my knuckles itch.
Flash, not in our place. At Chipotle.
Chipotle.
We study at Chipotle.
Chipotle.
At Chipotle.
I study at Chipotle.